Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. It Waits, Volume 5, Story 1. This list of encounters which befell my family, my mother, father, older sister, and myself, date back to the years 1990 up until early 1995. At this time, it may be relevant to mention that in this town, all houses are leased for free to the town's inhabitants. Before our relocation into this house early in 1990, it had been standing empty since 1983. It was less than a week later that my three-year-old sister started speaking of a woman she had seen in the living room the night before. The woman, as she had described her, had blonde hair and no face. Her being young of age, the rest of the family let the incident slip by without taking much notice. Relevant was her persistence to the story and her fear of a built-in backyard barbecue that she wanted removed. What made my mother and myself take notice that perhaps it had not been my sister's imagination after all was an event that occurred just over a month later. At this time, my mother, my sister, and myself had all been in different locations of the house when the front door had opened and we all heard my father step inside and say, "Hello," as he always did. What made this greeting slightly different than usual was that when we all went to greet him, he was nowhere in sight. What added to the mystery was a telephone call an hour later stating that my father's car had broken down at work and my mother needed to come and pick him up. This incident had been enough reason for my mother to give in and have the barbecue wrecked. Nothing out of the ordinary was found. My personal second encounter happened one evening while my sister and I had been lying on her bed. Her having just drifted off to sleep, my gaze had fallen onto the floor where I caught glimpses of what looked like a sheepdog run across the floor. Sure, it was something smaller, but genuine nonetheless. The animal had scurried across the floor and had gone into hiding beneath the bed. That was the last I ever saw of it. That was the night before the crows started to appear. In the months that followed, these events seemed to die down, and very few, including my father, would believe my mother, my sister, and my own claims that there was something wrong at this house. At this time, however, my parents started growing concerned about my growing fascination with the undead and the macabre, which made sense since I wasn't even yet 5 years old at the time. The next event that occurred, I believe it was close to Christmas time, involved a beating of drums in the backyard. My sister and myself had been getting up into the normal childhood mischief when a steady beating of drums had started ramming on the outside gas bottles. The drumming had been soft and slow at first, then louder, faster, until it had been loud enough for any witness to hear. This had been enough to drive both my sister and myself to tears, and we had fled the house and sat crying in the street until our parents had returned from shopping or whatever it was they had gone. This incident had laid to rest any doubt that my mother may still have attained, although my father had remained unconvinced. What events occurred in the years 1991 and 1992, having the years slip past from my memory, with only three personal experiences remaining. The first had been while the rest of my family had been in the backyard and I had been alone inside. Until this day, I can still recall an unknown presence that had laid its hand down on my shoulder, an icy sensation that now, after so many years, I can still remember as clearly as if it was happening right now. It was also around this time that my parents discovered the artwork I had done with my top room cupboard. Three walls, two doors, all covered in drawings of the dead. It was also in this cupboard that my favorite childhood book had vanished in an instant. This meaning that I had been sitting in the dark, reading it with a flashlight, and the next moment, it was gone. A thorough search by both of my parents proved useless, and what happened to remains a mystery up until today. The third incident, I recall, happened in the middle of 1992, while my sister was away at camp. This detail I recalled particularly well, for it just made it all the more strange that on the relevant morning, wherever I had gone in the house, her voice had still been calling out to me. Early 1993, and all others were awoken from the silence by my father's greeting incident repeating itself. Also, my father's skepticism took a knock at this point as my mother told the story of the night before where our newly acquired Labrador Retriever both looked at the roof and started barking at an unseen force. The loud sigh that followed, not even my dad could deny. It wasn't much later that my mother started speaking of hearing a voice singing in the hallways late at night, a voice that would die down every time she went to check on it. My sister had at this time also started growing more and more disturbed at what was happening around us, and at one point claimed that an icy presence had been chasing her around the house and had been lifting her up whenever she had tried to stop. Although this did sound far-fetched to even me, the way she had looked right after she had made this claim suggested differently. What made matters worse was another incident which had supposedly occurred while my mother had been collecting me from a friend. On our homecoming, we had discovered my sister and a friend sobbing in the street, spewing claims that footsteps had been heard in the hallway, doors had been opening by themselves, and lights and radios had been switching on and off by themselves. At this point, it was now a mutual agreement. There was something seriously wrong. My own sighting of a teenage boy in the hallway, which I later lay eyes on again, this time with a witness, just added wood to the fire. A summons not much later that my sister had called together involving her, myself, and two of her male friends would be the last time that these forces would ever be felt, and after that it was as if nothing had ever happened. Even the crows stopped coming, except one last thing. 2 years had passed since the final sighting at the house, and by this time I was 9 years old, and I found myself sitting in the classroom. At this point, a young girl who lived only a couple of houses from me, and coincidentally had the same name as my sister, with whom I nonetheless had never truly spoken with, started telling the class about a ghost of some kind in her house. The stories were exactly the same as mine. It was that same week that the crows again returned. Very few at first, later up to 20 at one time. Next story. My dad told me the story, and it happened to my grandfather, and it gave me a chance to look at spirits who have yet to rest but are not actually scaring people to death. This is my grandfather's tale. He was only 36 years old, and he of course needed a job. He had looked in agriculture, the stores down the street, even the Starkist factory that was quite a ways away. No jobs whatsoever. Finally, after 3 weeks of looking, he had seen an ad for a wanted bus driver for the night shift. At the time, he didn't care what kind of job it was or when he had to work. All he cared about was supporting his family. After a few days, he had gotten the job to work from sundown to an hour before sunset. The bus driving job was steady. He really didn't have any riders unless it was someone who also worked late. Soon, he had picked up on which riders came on, what time they came on, and where they should be dropped off. But a year into the job, he had gotten a new rider who would only ride for that one night. He saw the man standing at a bus stop to which no one had stood before, and for the first time, he would stop there. The man was described as well-rounded, pale, with a blue suit, which was very odd because it's so hot in Samoa, even at night. Like every other customer, my grandfather had welcomed him with a smile. Being the kindly fellow, my grandfather also tried to talk to him. He asked him, "How are you this evening? Where did you come from?" And just normal conversation questions. The only thing this man replied is to where he should be dropped off. My grandfather tried to get something cheerful out of the pale man, but there was no response. As soon as the bus got to the destination, as stated by the man, my grandfather opened the door, looked up to the mirror, and said to him, "Here is your stop, sir," and looked ahead. Usually at this time, you can hear the passenger get their stuff together and proceed to the front. But not this time. He heard dead silence. He looked up at the mirror and again saw nothing. Next story. I grew up in a 200-year-old cottage in South Gloucestershire, Southwest England. My parents spent 4 years, from 1981 to 1985, renovating the cottage to a livable state as it had been empty for a few years. The last resident had been an old lady. The original house had only two upstairs rooms. Both were bedrooms in which you had to pass through one to get to the other. My dad added a bathroom and another bedroom to the rear of the house. He also added a landing so each room could be accessed separately. Strange things started to happen once we moved in. My parents had one of the bedrooms at the front of the house. The other was a spare room for guests, and I had the new bedroom to the rear of the house. In the mid-1980s, my grandparents had come down from Yorkshire with my aunt, who was living in America at the time. My grandparents stayed in the spare bedroom, and my aunt stayed with me on the bottom of my bunk bed. After everyone had gone to bed, my aunt awoke to the sound of my bedroom door opening. My door was a typical old cottage style with a latch. We have to press down on the outside of the door, and a lever on the inside goes up, allowing you to push the door open. The door opened and then slowly closed. My aunt called out, "Hello, is anyone there?" Without reply, she put it down to a draft and went back to sleep. A while later, she awoke to the bed violently shaking. Naturally, she thought it was me playing games, and she asked me to stop. Realizing that I was fast asleep, she then called out, "Whoever you are, just stop it." This then stopped the bed from shaking. I'm not sure if she slept after this, but I know it was many years before she would talk about it. Several years later, in the 1990s, she came to visit us again. I had since got one of the bigger bedrooms at the front of the house, and my aunt reluctantly had to use my old bedroom, which had since become the spare room. She awoke in the middle of the night to find a lady in a bonnet at the bottom of her bed, staring at her. I have never heard what else happened. Next story. Selling real estate is an adventure unto itself. Sellers and buyers are always full of surprises, but occasionally the homes hold a few of their own. In April 1989, I did not believe in ghosts. No real reason to. It wasn't logical. But unfortunately, this story is true. That spring, I listed a beautiful 200-year-old Italianate mansion on 6 acres. The home was halfway through renovations when the owner gave me my first tour. We walked through the grand entry separating the twin front parlors. The one on the left served as a living room. A beautiful antique grand piano nearly filled the music room in the right parlor. A large formal dining room, and just beyond, a renovated gourmet kitchen and bath finished the first floor tour. We walked up the wide curved staircase in the center of the house, circling to the third floor tower. The tower was one room, surrounded by windows, where one could overlook the entire farm and surrounding countryside. Heading down to the second floor, 5 of the bedrooms were in various stages of construction, that is, all but one. The 6th bedroom, painted a sunny yellow with white trim, was left untouched. The owner explained that room couldn't be changed. If they tried to paint it, the new paint faded, and the yellow walls greeted them again the next morning. The temperature in that room was a constant 70 degrees, no matter what season. It was the young son's room of the owner's in the late 1800s, and she said he was one of the ghosts in the house. When you walked in that room, you felt a presence, as if someone was there. It was a calm presence, but it felt as if eyes were on you. I wanted out of that room, but I didn't believe in ghosts. According to the owner, sightings had been seen of a young boy, a man, and 2 men, while only her family was at home. While the workmen were there, tools disappeared all over the house, never to be seen again. Noises of something being dragged and footsteps coming from upstairs while the workmen were downstairs were reported. I, of course, totally discounted the stories because I don't believe in ghosts. "Goodbye," I said to my new client. "It's been a most enjoyable afternoon." I left excited about my unique historical listing and couldn't wait for my first open house in 2 weeks. The day of the open house was beautiful, 60 degrees and sunny. Tools were put away. The home gleamed. Visitors entered in the kitchen door where they sampled homemade donuts, mint iced tea, and coffee while they waited for one of 2 agents to take them on a tour. The agent then led the prospective buyer out the front door and returned to the kitchen for the next visitor. Towards the end of the three-hour opening, I let a very nice woman out the front door, where a cold breeze hit me when I closed the door. Turning to go back to the kitchen, I glanced to my right. Sitting at the piano in the music room was a young woman dressed in a plain gray dress, her dark brown hair drawn back in a bun. Her large dark eyes held no light. She was sitting quietly, just looking down at the keys. No music was playing. The hair on the back of my neck rose with goosebumps. Startled by seeing a visitor unattended, I went back to the kitchen to find the other agent. "Why is there someone wandering around the house without you?" "There is no one else here," the other agent answered. "Well, maybe she came in the front door," I agreed. "In that case, there's a lady waiting for you in the music room," the owner asked. "What does she look like?" As I described her, the owner smiled. "You've just met Sally Ann." "Who's that?" I asked with some apprehension. "Our ghost." The hair on the nape of my neck stood up, and I broke out in goosebumps yet again as I raced back to the front room. The music room was empty. The living area was also empty. I ran up the stairs. The bedrooms were empty. Only one place left, the tower. Taking the stairs two at a time, I reached the door. It squeaked as it slowly opened. Empty. She was gone. Vanished. My heart pounding, I was shaking as I slowly descended the staircase and walked back to the kitchen. This was silly, since I didn't believe in ghosts. Reaching the kitchen, I sat down and the owner pushed a cup of strong coffee in front of me. My hands were trembling and the hot liquid nearly spilled. The owner began to tell me the story of Sally Ann. Sally Ann, her husband, brother-in-law, and 8-year-old son were the original owners of the home. Sally Ann had an affair with her husband's brother, and when he found out, the two men dueled in the hallway of the second floor. Both men died as a result of their wound. Sally Ann's son died a year later of typhoid. Sally died at the young age of 30. It was said to be a broken heart. She shows herself only to people she approves of as guests in her home, but she is a kind ghost and is treated as another member of the family. Every once in a while, we see her son with her. The two brothers are probably the ones responsible for the tools missing. Just haven't seen them. I'm thinking, great, Sally likes me, but I don't believe in ghosts. The owner continued her story. I hired a seer to come evaluate the ghost situation. He identified all of the ghosts. The family is all buried at Lexington Cemetery. He told me to rent a metal detector and search around the fifth fence post from the front corner of the house. I would find Sally Ann's wedding ring. So I did. And 2 feet down, I found her wedding ring with her initials. It's in this drawer. Walking to the sideboard, she opened a drawer and put out a small band with initials on the inside. My breath caught. The hairs on my arm stood up. Some deep breathing helped, mind over matter and calmer now. I had again convinced myself that Sally Ann, or whatever it was merely a figment of my imagination. It was just an old ring. I don't believe in ghosts. I'd finished my coffee, and since the open house was now over, the other agent and I prepared to leave. As we neared the front door, I felt a cool breeze. The goosebumps returned. The hair on the nape of my neck stood up. Chills went down my spine. Slowly, I turned around. At the top of the stairs stood Sally Ann. She was smiling. The owner had told me where the family was buried at the cemetery, and because I am annoyingly curious, I later went to visit. There they all were, the whole family, just as she said. Still a cynic, I went to the historic archives to search for the stories. There they were. The seer story checked out. There was a picture of the widow. It was Sally Ann. And I guess I was only left with one choice, which was to believe. Next story. When I was 6 years old, I lived on 15th Street in Santa Monica, California. We were living in a house that was built by Seagar, the creator of the Popeye cartoon. One evening, my older brother and sister and I walked home from a diner down the street before the folks came home. This was during an era when kids could walk home without the adults. When we got home, my brother discovered we had no house key. My brother took me around the back and boosted me through the kitchen window so I could go through the house to open the front door. On my way down the hall, I passed the narrow stairs that went up to the upper floor. I looked up those stairs, and at the top stood this cartoon-looking person looking down at me. It was wildly shaking its head and making this strange laughing sound. I wasn't so scared. I've always been kind of strange that way. I ran to the front door and let in my siblings. I told them what happened, and they both understood. Each one of them had encounters with this malevolent spirit in the past. This is an absolutely true story. Next story. I had just gotten out of prison a couple of months earlier and had a hard time adjusting to my sleep routine. I had a full-time job at a factory working the day shift. I would wake up at about 3 a.m. every morning. Therefore, I usually was crashed out by 6 or 7 every night. One night, I was laying in bed watching TV. I was living with my parents at the time. I was a little scared to be at their house because it's in the country and they have no dusk to dawn light. I usually slept with the TV on. I rolled over to face the wall and go to sleep. As I lay there, relaxing and almost asleep, nature called. I rolled over to get up, and there in the corner of my room stood a young man. To this day, I can still tell you what he looked like. This happened many years ago. He stood very still, looking down at the floor. He had blonde hair, pale complexion. He wore a navy blue hoodie with pockets in the front. Both hands were in the pockets, tan-colored pants and dark shoes. I looked at him for a few seconds and then rolled back over. My heart was beating fast, and once I got the nerve, I flew out of my bed and into the living room. My parents thought I was nuts when I told them the story. I know what I saw, and I know it was real. Next story. Once I lived in this house in a small town in Maine. It was an older house. I don't know any history behind it, and I most likely never will, but it was an older house. We had a basement and four rooms, the usual old house style. The kitchen is where most of the abnormal activities would take place. Our front door had an entrance with another door, a heavy wooden door with a glass window. The way the door sat, you would have to push hard to open it, and then you would be in a small porch type which led to the front door. Quite often, the front door would swing open, but yet the outside door would remain closed. You could sit in the living room and watch our kitchen light turn on and off. The kitchen light we had was old-fashioned and had a fluorescent bulb with a metal pull string. Once you pulled the string, it came on. Well, my mom put a piece of yarn onto the metal string so us kids could reach it. You could actually watch that string being pulled. This happened every night, and we got used to it very quickly. I've always assumed that the presence was an old lady, and so did my family. We have no idea why we just felt that. Us kids would go to bed with our windows open and blankets off, because in the middle of summer it gets hot. We would wake up, our windows closed, and bundled up in blankets. Now, we had talked to my parents about it often, and they said we were at that age so they didn't even need to check on us. We were never frightened by any of this. It all became normal, even to our friends. But one day, and I will never forget any of this, my mom went to go turn on the kitchen light with the yarn on the end of it. She went to turn it on, and she was shocked so bad it dropped to her knees. Now, I really am not sure, but I'm almost positive that you cannot get electrocuted by yarn. A while after that, we moved. We just figured that she liked to play with us. It seemed like she liked to tease us. Next story. When I was 10 years old, I was at a family party at my aunt's house, just a few streets away from my house. A few of my close cousins and I walked back to my house to escape our crazy aunts and annoying little cousins. When we turned onto our street, my cousin said to me, "Is your dad home?" "No," I replied. "Oh, I thought I saw him sitting on the bench in your front yard a second ago, but he's gone now." He had dark curly hair and big sunglasses. When we all got inside my house, we sat down and ate ice cream sandwiches to cool off the hot summer day. "I swear, I just saw that guy again on your front steps, but he's gone now," my cousin said to me. Everyone just brushed it off and went upstairs to my room. As we sat and talked, we began to hear loud, distinct footsteps walking up and down the stairs. Terrified, I began flipping through the pages of the many books I had on ghosts and witchcraft, etc. After about an hour of reading useless information and waiting for the noises to cease, we worked up the courage to venture back downstairs. Clutching crucifixes and wearing rosary beads around our necks, we crept slowly down the stairs into the sunlit house. Nothing was there. There was no more noise. We threw open the front door and ran back to my aunt's house, not realizing we forgot to close the door behind us. While we were walking back to the party, a crimson red truck drove by us with its driver's side window open. The man inside had dark curly hair and big sunglasses. He slowly waved at us and drove off. We never saw this man again. When we got back to my aunt's house, we told everyone the story. No one believed us. Our parents thought that someone had broken into our house and we should have been more responsible and taken the liberty to call someone. We all vowed never to talk about it again, more out of embarrassment than fear. A few months later, my neighbors and best friends were having a sleepover when they saw a man with dark curly hair and big sunglasses in their window on the second floor. When I heard the story, I told them about my experience. Now, many years later, we have come to terms with our ghostly encounter, and we talk about it in humor. But none of us would dare bring it up with our parents for fear of what they would say. The look our parents had on their faces that day could have scared the devil. The worry in their voices was unlike what we had ever heard before. Could there be more to the story of the man with the dark curly hair and the big sunglasses? Did our parents know something we didn't? I guess we'll never know. Next story. I met my best friend Diane during our freshman year in high school, which is 1980. We both lived in Whittier, California. She lived on Mar Vista Street near Colima Road. And if any of you know that area, then you know there is a lot of spooky stuff that goes on there. Well, one day Diane and I skipped school and we went to her house. She had a very nice house since her parents had money and I was quite impressed. Well, until I got inside anyway. It was beautiful with a lot of great furniture and big rooms, but something had me bothered or rather nervous. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I was scared. Diane had to use the bathroom and I asked her not to. She laughed and said, "What's wrong with you?" Needless to say, I went with her to the bathroom. We left afterwards to go hang out at the mall and she never said a word about her house. Well, even after high school, we remained best friends and I was basically a member of her family now. One night, I actually stayed there with her. This had to have been in 1986, I believe. The same spooky feeling was there, but I got through the night with nothing happening to me or scaring me. Then, a few more years later, either in 1988 or 89, I celebrated Christmas at her house. I saw her sister and husband in the other room talking, so I walked over to join them. They were laughing, so I asked what was so funny, and they told me they were laughing about the ghost in the house. I said, "What?" They went on to tell me that all of them have felt a presence and finally ended up seeing the thing. Diane said that it got in bed with her one time. She felt someone get in bed with her and thought it was her sister Nancy coming home drunk. Diane says she was laying on her side and that the person put their arm over her. She looked down but couldn't see an arm, yet she felt it. So she jumped out of bed and ran to her parents' room. They told her they would have woken up in the middle of the night to find someone looking into their bedroom from the hall. They said it would never go into their room, but they could see its head looking in. Her sister, Nancy, had actually seen it one night. She woke up with a feeling that someone was behind her. She was facing the wall and said she didn't want to turn over and look, but was scared it might be a burglar. So she forced herself to turn over and said she saw a black hooded figure standing there. She screamed, jumped out of bed, and actually ran right past it into her parents' room. She was to see it again, but this time in broad daylight. She said she came home from school about 4:30 p.m. one afternoon with her boyfriend and that she forgot her key inside. Well, they found an open window, so he gave her a boost, and she started to climb in through the window into a spare room used for storage. She was almost all the way inside when she looked up and saw the black hooded figure walk right by the room she was entering. She yelled at her boyfriend to pull her back fast, and once outside, she told him what happened and waited for her mom to come home. The thing eventually did come into their parents' bedroom one night, and the mother was the one who saw it and started screaming for her husband to wake up but he wouldn't. She even clawed his face with her nails, and he still didn't wake up. She managed to run and turn on the light, and it disappeared. I was a bit angry at them for never having told me this from the beginning, especially Diane, because she knew I was afraid that first day I went to her house, but she said nothing. She said lots of people always got the same feeling when they would go there, and she knew what it was, but didn't want to frighten anyone. They all eventually moved out, and their cousins took over the house. The cousins did not take their ghost stories seriously, but from what Diane told me, that family's had major turmoil ever since moving there. There's a possible cause for all of this. A friend of Diane's father came over one day and asked him, "What are you guys doing with that?" It was a statue that was found in a Mexican cave, and according to the friend, it is some kind of evil god that people would make sacrifices to. Diane's mom said they bought it at an antique store and liked it because it was different. Her parents didn't believe the statue could be haunted, so they never gave it a second thought. And yes, they did leave the statue there when they moved out. Now, a quick note about that area, that Colima Road. One night, when I was coming home from a friend's house in 1998, it was exactly midnight. And just as I was reaching the top of the hill, a UFO flew right over the road. I thought at first it might be a reflection on my windshield, but I had already reached the top of the hill where there are no street lights. It's all dark there. The UFO looked like a tennis ball at arm's length and just streaked across my path over Colima Road, heading towards La Habra area. UFOs, ghosts, murders, urban legends, all of those are well known around the Colima Road Canyon area.